Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to give the biggest string jam welcome you possibly can. And raise the rafters, please, for Edwina Hayes!
Thank you so much. I have to say, I'm having such a nice time. James and Sue and lovely Donald who opened up the night. It's always really nice to go anywhere and play for an evening. I absolutely love it. It's my favourite thing to do, which is quite handy because I can't really do anything else. But it's always even nicer when you get to sit down and listen to somebody else. So hi, a very good evening and thank you so much for having me. Like I said, I've been having a lovely time since about 2 seconds before I walked in the front door because this is such a nice hotel. And I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for coming and spending your Saturday night here listening. And I live in East Yorkshire, but I was chatting with Ali and Karen earlier. And they said, where are you from? I said, well, I'm from Lancashire, but I live in East Yorkshire. And East Yorkshire is pretty much, if you draw a line on the map between York and Hull, which is going to be about like that on the map, and then everything just to the east of that, in a bit of a triangle, below Scarborough and above the Humber estuary, is East Yorkshire. They call it the East Riding of Yorkshire, and it's really nice. It's kind of like the least trendy part of Yorkshire, really. There's no Leeds, and there's no Sheffield or anything like that. But it's really nice, and I moved there in 1994 with my mum and my sister, and my mum retired after 30 years working at Preston Job Centre in the civil service. She'd had enough, and her blood pressure was getting a bit higher, and she thought, right. So she took an early redundancy package, and with the money, she bought a fish and chip shop and a little cafe in Bridlington, which is where I moved. And it was brilliant. So all through the 90s, my sister and my mum and I ran the chip shop and the cafe, and at the same time, I had started going to Bridlington Folk Club, because I'd seen a poster about 2 weeks after I moved there. Bridlington Folk Club reforming. Singers wanted for Singers' Night, and I was 20. And I hadn't ever really sung in public before. I just sung at family dues and for long-suffering friends. And I thought, right, I'm going to go down. And I went down and did two songs with the really wobbly knees. And I haven't really sat down since. And that was now, well, a very long time ago, 24 years ago. And so that's kind of just a little bit about me. And of course, when I started off, I wasn't doing songs I've written. I was doing all my favourites. So I'm going to do a song by one of my favourites. Now, I still really enjoy doing my cover songs as well as my originals. And one of my big favourites, well, one is Martin Simpson. I always think it's great when you walk in, you think, right, Martin Simpson's coming next. This is going to be a really nice place. And I'm a big fan of Martin Simpson. And I have to say, coming on after the raffle, that he said something at a gig about 2 years ago that I heard him say. I went along to this gig. He said that people had been arguing a lot about the definition of folk music, he'd noticed. And he said, it's really silly. People are always arguing about it. What's folk music? And people fall out. They break friends on Facebook, delete each other, everything. And he said, it's silly. It's very simple. Folk music is 2 45-minute sets of music with a raffle in the middle. And I thought, that's brilliant. So, very nice to see Martin on the wall. But my other favourite, I think tied probably with Martin, is the lovely Richard Thompson. So I'm going to do one of his songs now. And it's one called From Galway to Graceland. And if you're in a singing mood, feel free to join in at any point throughout the set as well. So, All About This Lady, this song, if you haven't heard it, all about a lady who has a big crush on Elvis. And I've had a lot of crushes over the years, so I kind of know how she feels. I think we're all just maybe one step away from being a bit like this lady, you know. Maybe. Well, she dressed in the dark, and she whispered in, and she was pretty in pink, like a young girl again. 20 years married, and she never thought twice. She picked up the bags, walked into night. And silver wings carried her over the sea, from the west coast of Ireland to West Tennessee, just to be with her sweetheart. Oh, she left everything, Graceland, to be with the king. Well, she sang Love Me Tender, 'cause that's the song she liked best. She had Elvis, I Love You, tattooed on her breast. When they landed in Memphis, well, her heart beat so at last. And she knelt at his graveside day after day. Come closing time, they would lead her away, just to be with her sweetheart. Oh, she left everything, Graceland, to be with the king. conversation open, and she told him her dreams, and she thought that he answered, 'cause that's how it seemed. But when they dragged her away, it was handcuffs this time. She said, "My dear man, are you out of your mind? Don't you know that we're married? See him wearing his ring. And I've come from Galway to Graceland to be with the king. I've come from Galway to Graceland to be with the king." And this time last year, I was in Australia doing my very first ever Australian tour, which was really good fun. I went for a month, and it was lovely, and there's all these lovely festivals that have been going for a really long time. And I bumped into quite a few people I knew. One of the first people I saw was Ross Ainslie. I thought, I don't believe this, I'm on the south coast of Victoria, 4 hours south of Melbourne. There's Ross Ainslie, it was fantastic. And Christopher Hyland, Julie Matthews, and people like that, who were all really lovely. And on the same bill for this first festival, the Port Ferry Folk Festival, was Richard Thompson. And I did queue up, and he did a CD signing. I did one as well. Everybody does one. And I was a lot lower down the bill. But I did my CD signing, and I went along later on to queue for Richard Thompson. I wanted to buy his acoustic classic album and a couple of copies for my friends. And I also just wanted to meet him because I think he's great. And I queued up, and the people in the shop were coming up and saying, "Are you all right, Edwina? Do you need something?" I said, no, I'm queuing. I'm queuing for Richard Thompson." And they said, "Oh, we've never seen an artist queue for another artist." Anyway, it got to my turn, and the other voice in your head's going, just be cool, don't make a fool of yourself. And it got to my turn, and he looked at me, and I looked down at him, and I just went, "Oh, I love you." Just downhill all the way from there on. But I was really thrilled to find that song on it, because I spent ages learning that song a couple of years ago from a really wobbly old YouTube clip of him singing it live somewhere years ago. And on this acoustic classics, it was a lot of his most well-known songs with just him and a guitar, and I thought, wow, if only I'd waited, I could learn it from that. But I'm going to do one of my own songs now, another one. The first song I sang was called "Leave a Light On For You," and this is one called "I Want You To Stay." And I don't think I've ever done a gig where three people have bought a CD before I even started. So thank you very much, you three. That's rather lovely. I did say if you don't like it, I'm rubbish, I've been running about it. But one gentleman bought the CD, and he said there was a song you heard on YouTube where I'm singing in a coffee shop. I said, "Oh, that's not on either." He said, "Which one is that?" And I said, "It's not on either." So the stroke of marketing genius there. The one and only video, not on an album. But I'm going to sing it. It's called "Want You To Stay." And I mentioned having had many crushes over the years, and I have. And quite a lot of them have inspired songs. And one of them inspired this song. And it was a crush on an American singer called Roland Stebbins. So I've been going over to America a lot this past 10 or 15 years, and I just happened to go across America like you do, you know, on a big trip. I'd always wanted to go, and I went from one side to the other when I was, about 26 or something. And I went to Nashville for 2 nights, and I ended up staying for 6 weeks. And the reason being, everybody thought it was to do with the music, and I had just started writing songs then. And it wasn't to do with the music at all, it was because I'd been in Nashville 10 minutes, and I was in a shop really near the bus station, and a chap called Michael in the shop said, "Oh, you know, you're not from around here." I said, "No." I said, "Come to Nashville to look at find the Bluebird Cafe, the lovely cafe, the Bluebird Cafe," and that's where I'd gone. And he said, "Oh," he said, "well, you know, the Bluebird will be on tomorrow, but there's a really good music night on at the English pub. Have you ever been to the Sherlock Holmes? Have you heard of the Sherlock Holmes?" I said, no, it's my first day in Nashville." He said, "Oh, well, why don't you come down to the Sherlock Holmes? They do a great Yorkshire pudding, and everybody's really nice. And you should must meet Tony, he's English." And I said, "Oh, okay." So I went to the Sherlock Holmes, and I met Margaret and Terry from Derby, who ran it. I met Tony, the fanboy and hairstylist from Doncaster, who had a salon above. And I couldn't believe it, all these lovely expats. And Within 24 hours, Tony had decided to offer me his spare room to stay in, and Margaret and Terry said, would I like a job? Washing up, $6 an hour, cash in hand. I thought, okay. So I thought, oh, lovely. I met some locals, and I've been going all around America, having a fantastic time, but not really meeting anybody local. So I stayed for 6 weeks, and I'm always going back to visit whenever I can. At least once a year, every couple of years, I like to go. And I met some such lovely friends there. And over the years, I met a singer called Roland. And I really fancied him, and he didn't fancy me. And I knew he didn't fancy me. You know, you really do know, but you hope, don't you? You know. One of the reasons I knew is because he was always in love with this girl called Rachel, a painter who was really, really thin. And he was always going on about her. And I just decided on one of my visits to invite him out for a drink. And I thought about it, thought, right, well, if he says no, I'll say this. And if he says yes, great. And what he actually said was, I would, Edwina, but I'm in the middle of a really good book. I think I finally then, you know, realised it was never going to happen really. So I got an idea for a song and I thought it wanted me to stay. So this is for the lovely chap. I think it might be Rob who bought a CD. Hoping this song might be on it and it didn't. So, from doing a couple of songs every week to doing, you know, a little 15 minutes here and there. And then, you know, after a year or two, I had enough songs, you know, to go and enough confidence to go and try and do my first few ever gigs around Bridlington and Filey and Scarborough, which was very exciting. And you got paid and everything, which was brilliant. And then I sort of ventured a bit further afield. And as I say, I went to America. I was very inspired by that. And one day I went into what I thought was a folk club singers' night, had not been before, and everybody was doing their own songs, and there was a great big sign on the wall that said, original songs only, which I hadn't noticed. And I had to go and say to the lady, sort of tiptoed, you know, through the candlelit tables to the back, and I said, I'm really sorry, can I take my name off? And the lady said, why? And I said, well, I don't have any original songs, I'm sorry. And she said, well, don't worry about it. She said, just sing anything you want and come back. She'd keep coming, who knows? And I write a song, and she was lovely. And all the people I met at that club are still my friends today. And this was sort of at the end of 1999, I think. And again, I thought, I'll have a go at writing a song. And I still feel like all the songs I've written are just me having a go, you know, writing a song. And they just sort of pop in my head every now and again. And this next one is a song really for anybody who's maybe been single for a while, because I was single for such a long time that it, at family do's, you know, my aunties would be quite concerned. And they'd say, you know, Edwina, they caught him. And I'd say, no, why not? Why not, you know? And it was always fine because I had loads and loads of cousins, and there were still a few cousins that were single. My cousin Jimmy is an accountant, he went travelling around Australia. And my cousin Georgie, she likes travelling as well, and they're all about my age. And then one by one, they all got married, and there was only me. Anyway, I got this idea for a song one day because I thought, I'm actually quite happily single. You know, if one of these crushes fancied me back, that'd be great. But apart from that, you know, I'm busy. Like I said, I'm busy. So I got this idea for a song about being on your own, but not necessarily being unhappy. And I called it Nobody's Coming Around. I sometimes get people on my Facebook music page, on my website, writing, and they put, why do you never come to, or when are you coming to? You know, and I try and get myself all around Scotland and the south of England and all around playing gigs. And really, you know, I think, well, but as soon as somebody books me, I will, you know. You can't, you know, make someone put you on. And a bit like you can't make someone be your boyfriend, really, I suppose. So, anyway. So when are you going to be courting? As soon as somebody asks, you know. I've been a fool for love.
'cause nobody's coming around.
And I got to tour with her three times actually, which was lovely. And I've always been such a fan of hers, and I used to learn her songs to go down and sing at the Bridlington Folk Club, and it was just amazing to me that she ever recorded one of my songs. And at the time I would never have even thought that I would have written a song for anybody to cover. So you know, it was really nice how that all happened, you know, 10 or 15 years later, which was lovely. But I'm gonna do one of her songs that a few years ago I was invited to sing on an album that this couple put together, and the couple are called Pete and Maura Kennedy, and they're good friends of Nancy Griffith, and the last couple of times that she's been over touring, she's had them with her as the support and also part of her backing group, and they're lovely, and I had been dealing with them via email and liaising with them about this album a few years before, so I went along to one of the shows and it was very nice to meet them. And they came over and they finally finished this album. And Donald mentioned earlier, Tom Russell, this album's got all American singers on it and me, who lives in Driffield. So it was a real honour, and with people like Tom Russell and Carolyn Hester. And it's all these different artists doing a cover of an Nancy song. And they came over and decided to sort of build on this bit of a following they got from touring with Nancy. And they came and did a tour and they decided to promote the charity album that they made. And it was all for charity, for the Landmine Charity Mag. Minds Advisory Group, and they invited me to come and be a special guest on the tour for 2 weeks. It was a couple of summers ago, here last June, and they said, well, you know, don't just do that one that you did on the album, you may as well join us for the whole thing and sing some backing vocals, play some guitar. So I got to go around the country for 2 weeks with the Kennedys doing Nancy Griffith songs. It was brilliant. It was like a dream come true. And so I'll sing you the song I sang on the album, and it was funny, Ali was saying, you know, I'm not really political either. I think this is the most political it ever gets when it comes to singing, and it's not even a song I wrote, but yeah, this whole thing about Donald Trump is hilarious. And I was watching something on telly, coming from a gig, it was like 3 a.m, I was watching Modern Family, and Modern Family finished, I recorded it, and on came the BBC News 24, just in time for me to hear this woman do a slip up of the tongue, and she said, so who's doing what? How's everybody doing? Well, Donald Trump. Oh, she said Trump. I thought, oh my God, brilliant. I thought that was pretty good. I rewound it and recorded it, and then that was really funny. But this is a song that Nancy wrote in the 80s when she thinks she was in despair about George Bush Sr. And it hasn't really got any better, has it? Apart from lovely Obama. But I really hope he's not president. There'll be lots of good jokes about his hairdo, though. I've got a friend in Nashville called Casey Jones. She actually has a song called Donald Trump's Hair. You can Google it. She wrote it about 10 years ago. It's the funniest. She's a comedy singer. It's brilliant. She writes songs that are called things like, I could get over him if I could get under you. And waiting for the guy to die. That's one about a young bimbo who marries a real old fella and he won't die. And she wrote Donald Trump's Hair, which is very, very funny. So anyway, this is It's a Hard Life Wherever You Go, this song, and it has a nice chorus, you can join in on. It's a hard life, it's a hard life, it's a hard life wherever you go. So, it's a hard life, it's a very hard life, it's a hard life wherever.
go. But if we poison our children with hatred, oh, then a hard life is all that they'll know. And there ain't no patience in Belfast that can go. Cafeteria line in Chicago. The fat man in front of me is calling black people trash to his children. Oh, but he's the only trash here I see. And I am thinking this man wears a white hood. Yeah, in the night when his children should sleep. See him, and they'll think that white hood's all they need. And it's a hard life, it's a hard life, it's a very hard life, it's a hard life wherever you go. And if we poison our children with hatred, oh, then a hard life is all that they'll know. Chicago, for those kids to go. Well, I was a child in the 60s, and dreams could be held through TV. Oh, Disney and Cronkite, Martin Luther, and I believed, I believed, I believed.
Next week, or and so you're going to write some songs, and I go, well, no, not really. I'm going to hang out with Margaret and Terry and Tony and everybody and have a little holiday. But because such a lot of my friends that I met there are all musical, there's usually somebody ends up saying, come on, let's sit down and have a go at writing a song together, which is always really nice. And a few years ago, I was invited to go and write a song with this lovely songwriter called Don, and he did it for a living, did songwriting for a living, and he didn't play an instrument. He didn't do gigs or anything like that. He liked to write lyrics on a laptop, and he did play a little bit of saxophone in his spare time. And I thought his story was great because he'd moved to Nashville from Texas 11 years before, and his wife had said that they could give it 10 years. He wanted to follow his dream and be a songwriter. And she basically said, after 10 years, if you've not made it, we're going home and you're going to get a proper job. And so when I met Don, he'd been at it 11 years and they'd put the house up for sale. He'd kind of decided that was it. And it wasn't ever going to happen. And he just spent, you know, every morning and every afternoon, you know, in songwriting sessions with different people around Nashville. And all he wanted was someone to cover one of his songs. Well, I met him that day and I was telling him about my story, having travelled across America and landed in Nashville and met these lovely friends, you know, these lifelong friends. And we just got chatting, you know, and we got an idea for a song, and I had a bit of a melody, and he came up with a few words. And we wrote this song called Closer to Home, all about following your dreams, you know, whatever they might be. And anyway, 3 months later, we got together again, and I went over and we decided to do some more songwriting. And in that 3 months, a song that he'd written with one of his friends had been covered by the country singer Alan Jackson, and Alan Jackson had got his old friend Jimmy Buffett in to sing on it, and it had become a country number one, and it was the song It's 5 o'clock Somewhere. And he was so happy, and they'd taken the house off the market, they didn't have to move. And just before we left, he went, hey, look at this, and he opened his briefcase, and he said, they got this cheque out, and he showed me this cheque, and it was a cheque for $125,000, and it was, he said, this is something called an advance royalty cheque, just one of many he was going to get for his half of writing that song. And it was just brilliant. I thought, wow, so whenever I sing this song, I think of Don and how close he came to packing it all in. And it just takes that one little bit of luck, you know. So there you go. So this is Closer to Home. I found something and I'm holding on. And the further I go, I get closer to home. Well, I've been in places where I could not stay, 'cause the dreams that I've been chasing were just in the way. The road has been hard, it's been heavy and long. If he can get up in the morning and go to bed in the evening and in between do what he wants. And I thought, well, that's rather fantastic. I suppose you could take that a bit out of context, but looking at it broadly, I thought that was rather nice. So I always feel lucky every single day that I get to go and do gigs. And I gave up all my millions of part-time jobs. Next year in 2017, it'll be 10 years since I've done music full-time, which technically makes you a professional. But I don't know about that sometimes. So I feel really lucky, but I think one of my favourite things about it is just all the friends I've made along the way, right from Brittington Folk Club, lovely Ralph and Bob. I always remember Ralph, he'd get up and do a song called Mr. Punch and Judy Man. And he now lives in Corfu, he's retired with lovely Barbara and all these friends. And then, you know, going to this other acoustic club, everybody sang their own songs. And I've got all these lovely friends from that. And all my lovely friends that I made in Nashville and I'm still in touch with, and all my friends, you know, near where I live. And it's just a lovely small world when it comes to music. And I once drove home from a gig and I heard Bob Harris. I was tuning into his midnight show that mysteriously disappeared and popped up again at 3 a.m. on a Saturday. Poor old Bob. They sort of shoved everybody around and they changed everything. And I used to quite like tuning in on the way home from a gig. And he was interviewing that guy, Passenger, one week. And he was saying to him, music's such a lovely passport to travel through life with. And I thought, what a nice way of putting it. That is really nice. So I'm going to sing a song now that's written by a lovely friend that I met through music. And it's a lovely friend called John Bird. And his name is J-O-N for Jonathan. And his surname is B-Y-R-D by the Birds, like Roger McGuinn and the Birds. And it's a song that he wrote called Stay, and I've had it on one of his little EPs for years and years and years. And my favourite thing about John is that when I first met him, he did his music as a hobby, and he was a full-time teacher, and he worked in a pub at night, and he also did a bit of extra sort of part-time work in a great big electrical goods store. And he was trying to, you know, keep all that joy and do an odd gig. And I remember thinking, why is John not famous? He's one of these friends that all of us just thought John should be famous and he could be filling concert halls, you know. And anyway, to everybody's delight, about 3 years ago, he announced he was going to go full-time and be professional and give up all his jobs. And he was 56 when he did that. So he's going to be 60 this year, you know. And I get emails from people, which is really nice. And I get emails from people saying, can you give me any tips, you know, on starting off? I want to be a singer-songwriter. And my first tip is always go along to open mic nights and singers' nights. It's a great way to start. And this one girl wrote to me, and I wrote back saying that, and she wrote back and said, Edwina, I'm 36 this year, I'm too old. I'm way too old. And I wrote back saying, well, let me tell you about my friend John, you're never too old. So this is his song Stay, and he gave me permission to record this for my next CD, which I'm excited about. It's a really depressing song, I really love it. The more depressing a song is, the more I like it. So it's called Stay. When the wind blows through the trees, your name comes to me. As the stars light the sky, I see your eyes. As the waves break on the shore, I hear your voice, but I never you to stay. Lonely minutes pass like days as I sit and I wait for just a single moment of your affection.
Yeah.
precious golden lace. Your hair falls round your face. As my empty season ends, I kiss your skin. Your lips say my name, and I feel no shame. But I never convince you to stay. No, I never convince you to stay.
She's gone. But never mind. We'll dedicate it to her. Oh, she's there. She just looks out now. Well, it's a song called Pour Me a Drink, so I thought it seemed quite fitting. And it's a title song of one of my CDs. I've got two CDs. I did make a third one years and years ago on a little record label, which then went bust and folded up and disappeared. And they'd only printed a couple of thousand copies of this album, and nothing really ever happened with it mainstream-wise or anything. I think they hoped it might, but it didn't. Michael Parkinson played a couple of songs a couple of Sundays running, which my mum and my auntie Celia were thrilled about. And I did actually get invited to sing at Michael Parkinson's pub down in Maidenhead, which was very exciting. And I took my mum and my sister, and there was all these sort of people, film and television people, had come to this gig. They kind of came to see everybody who was there. People like Lucy Silvers and Jamie Cullum had played there. And I ended up playing there, you know. And there were all these people there waiting for Michael, and there was an empty sort of, a bit like that table there. Imagine the lady at the back wasn't sitting, there was an empty seat, Michael's seat, all waiting for him to come. And the word had come through that he wasn't going to have the soup. It was a sort of like three-course meal and me. So everybody went ahead with the soup, and then he arrived. And it was ages and ages and ages before I sat down, and it turned out that it ended up meeting my mum, was kind of at the back of my sister. And it sat down and I was talking to about Mushy Peas for about 15 minutes, because he used to go to Bridlington as a boy, and he's from Barnsley. So my mum still had a lovely chat about the peas, because she always used to do her own Mushy Peas in the gym shop. And it was really, really good fun. So, you know, nothing really ever happened with it. And I ended up buying all the copies they had ever pressed off them. And once they ran out, I needed to make an album. And it was a lovely album. It was very fully produced. It was done with a sort of record company team and all these fantastic people on it. And anyway, it just sort of like all the masters and everything all disappeared. No idea where they are. And so that was in 2004, and it got to 2008. And I thought, well, I need a CD, really, because I was building up my gigs. And I just decided to try and have a go at making my own, and I made Pour Me a Drink, and I was so proud of it when I'd made it, because I did love the first CD, but I used to worry that people would see me. I've only ever been me and a guitar. Maybe my friend Mal or my friend Jake might get up and join me at a gig. And I thought, I used to worry that people would buy this album and go home and think, what's this, you know, because they'd just seen a girl and a guitar. And subsequently as well, if people heard that and came to a gig, I used to worry that they'd be thinking, where's the band? Are they all coming out in a minute or what? And I remember Katie Tunstall talking about this. She did a similar thing. She made an album on a record label. Nothing really happened with it, and she had to tour this album. And so she got that loop pedal thing to try and recreate the full band, you know, and what a brilliant thing that she did. You know, she was great. And when I started playing in London about, oh, let's say 2001, I used to go down and play there. I used to play a club, and everybody would get up and do two songs, original songs. And they'd have a headliner at the end of the night who did about 20 minutes, and they got £30. And Katie Tunstall used to come and play there. And me and my friend Astrid thought she was great. And I remember we bought one of her cassettes for a fiver, and we split it between us, £2.50. And Astrid would have it for a month, and I'd have it for a month. And isn't that great? So there you go. So anyway, I'm going to do Pour Me a Drink, which is the song Ali mentioned that Nancy Griffith covered, which was lovely. And it's a song that was inspired by my dad, and a bit of a departure from singing about people I fancy that don't fancy me. It was a song inspired by my dad's book. My dad wrote a book in the 90s, and he called it Bill Hayes, An Autobiography, My Life Through the Bottom of a Glass, which kind of tells you a little bit about him. He was a bit of a lovable rogue, as the phrase often used, and he travelled the world really the last sort of 30 years drinking quite a bit, doing ever so slightly dodgy business deals and marrying several times. And he was just a real character, and he settled down in Buenos Aires, Argentina in the end, and spent the last 10 years of his life writing some more of his memoirs and dabbling in the meat trade. And he's always on the end of the phone, and he used to really love it if I rang him on the way home from a gig. I used to stop at the services a lot and call him. It was 4 hours behind in Argentina. I'd always say, "Hello, love, where have you been tonight?" And I'd tell him. And anywhere I'd been in the whole of the country, he had a story about it. And I just used to tickle me. And I remember once I'd been in Wales, I'd been to Cardiff, and I was on the way back. And I got to about Doncaster, and I always stop at the tip shelf services on the M1. And I thought, "I'm going to ring me dad." And he said, "Hello, where have you been tonight?" And I said, "I've been in Wales." I went, "Oh, don't talk to me about bloody Wales. Only good road in Wales is a road out." And I remember him saying that. And I said, "Why is that?" Then he went, "Oh, I was on a bus, love." He said, "Years ago," he said, in Cardiff. And he said, "I was a bit drunk. And I found a £20 note on the floor." He said, "I picked it up and I put it in my pocket and I got off. Nobody saw me." He said, "It was great." And I went to a pub and I carried on drinking. I spent a lot, brilliant. He said, "Until I realised it was my own bloody £20 note. My pocket on the bus." That was my dad. And this is Pour Me a Drink. Very easy for joining in this one as well.
Go.
crush song now. This is one that was inspired by a sixth-grade crush of my friend Jake's friend Norm, who I'd known for ages and ages, and Norm would come and visit every now and again, come and visit Jake, and we'd all go out for a few drinks, and I'd known him for a couple of years, and one night we all went out for drinks, and we all started talking about films, and Norman told me that his favourite film was The Bridges of Madison County, and I couldn't get it out of my head, because I loved that film, it's so nice. So the next day, with a bit of a hangover, I started thinking, wow, you know, I would never have thought he was such a sensitive guy. And I just thought, ooh, you know, and I thought maybe I quite fancy him, maybe, I don't know. And I got this idea for a song about fancying someone who you'd known for ages and never thought of in that way. And anyway, later in the week, Jake came over and I remember saying, oh, I've got a new song, can I play it for you? And I'd started this song. And I told him what inspired it, and he went, oh my God. I said, I can't believe he's still saying that. He said, he used to say that when we were like at college. It's not his favourite film at all. He thought he came up with that as a chat-up line for women, thinking that they think he was really sensitive. But his favourite film was Die Hard, like me. So I made him promise never to tell him, and he never did. And there you go. So anyway, it's got a song called Season of Love. CD if they have a request, and so we're getting close to the end of the night, so I just wondered, has anybody got a request for anything that I haven't played that they might like to hear me play, or are you just happy to have anything?
The Road.
Oh, no, I haven't done that one for ages. Oh, well, there you go. I shall do it. This is a song called The Road. It's one of the first few songs I ever wrote. I haven't really played it in a long time. So that serves me right, doesn't it? And then I did a version of Froggy went to court in on that Paul Mia Drink album, and somebody, and I never used to play it, so I just recorded it on one, and it was actually for a children's charity album at the time, and I ended up using it on my Paul Mia Drink album a bit later on. And somebody asked for that at a gig, and it does go on for about 4 days, that song. And I remember I had the interval, and this lovely girl and her boyfriend had come, I was doing a gig in Devizes in a pub called The Bell by the Green. And she said, oh, it's our favourite song, we just spotted you were on, and I'd really love it if you'd sing it, and it's my birthday. And I thought, oh, I can't say no. So I remember going to the car park and crouching down behind my car with my guitar trying to figure out. I thought, right, I'll have a go. Anyway, I got through it somehow. But this one is one I've not done for a while, so I'll give it a whirl. But the gentleman here. Such a big fan of Mary Black when I first heard her. I used to like learning her songs. And it's one that I didn't realise at the time was written by Ewan McCall. And every sort of 18 months or so, I come up to Inverness and kind of like up to Inverness and round the corner and down a bit. And by Loch Ness in Moniac Moor is a lovely creative writing centre. and it's really lovely, and they do writing courses all year round, and every now and again they have a songwriting one. And Boo Hewardine and I go, and we're the tutors. He's like the main tutor and I'm his assistant, a bit like Paul Daniels from Derry McGee. And poor Daniels. And I'd actually forgotten about that. But it's very lovely, and we've done it 3 times now, and people come and book onto the course for a week, and we all write songs and do workshops, and it's just great fun. And it's about songwriting, and also for people who might want to move from, you know, doing open mic nights and part-time jobs to doing it for a living full-time. So we do an open mic night, we do all kinds of things. And it's really good fun, and there's always a guest halfway through the week. And the first year, Eddie Reader came along and she just sat on the end of the settee and sang songs all night, which was wonderful. And the second year, it was lovely, Kareen Polwart, she came along. And then this last time, it was Martin Stevenson in January, which was really, really lovely. But Boo often talks about Ewan McCall and his song, The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face, because a bit like my friend Don in Nashville, Ewan McCall didn't play anything, he didn't read music, he wrote that song and he sang it on the phone to Peggy Seeger, and it's just 12 lines and it's 3 verses, there isn't even a chorus or a middle eight or anything, and it went on to become one of the, you know, most well-known songs of all time. And it's just a really nice example to give to people who might think, oh, I can't possibly write a song, you know, and it's really lovely. And he wrote this next one, and it's a lovely song called School Day's Over. I did hear that Ewan McCall wasn't awfully nice sometimes, and I have heard this awful story. He had a Chamber of Horrors section in his record collection where he kept all the covers anybody had ever done of his songs, including Elvis. And I just think, well, how great. You know, he's a wonderful songwriter, but I was thinking, I bet he never kept the money back, though. I don't know, you never know if these things are true, but fantastic songwriter anyway. So this is a song I know through Mary Black, School Day's Over. So. School day's over, come on then John, time to be getting your pit boots on. On with your sock and your moleskin trousers, time you're on your way. Time you're learning the pitman's job, learning the pitman's pay. Come on then, Jim, it's time to go. Time you were working down. Time to be having a pick and shovel. You start at the pits today. Time you're learning the collier's job, learning the collier's pay. Come on then, guy. Blitz me.
Thank you so much, and I had such a wonderful
wonderful, wonderful evening. It seems to have gone so, so very quickly as well. And so before I do my last song, thank you all again for coming. And a big thanks to Ali and the lovely team, all of whom I've met for the first time tonight. And it really did surprise me because Dottle introduced himself to me as Dave and I got horribly confused. But that's his nickname, so it is Dave. And the lovely chap on the lights, I didn't actually get to meet him after soundtrack had gone up to get changed. But Ali and Karen and all the lovely team, and please give them all a big warm round of applause, and thank you very, very much for having me. And just one more time, a lovely big hand for all the people who sang earlier, lovely Al and Sue and Donald, a big round of applause for them. And it has indeed a really lovely sound. It really does make a difference sometimes. I have to say it's been a pleasure to sing for you all tonight. I've really enjoyed it. So I'm going to finish off with the last song on my Paul Meadering album. It's called Irish Waltz. And this was my first attempt at having a go at writing a folk song that sounded folky. And it was completely 100% inspired by Kate Busby, because I'm such a big fan of hers, and I've been a fan of hers since I saw her in 1999 at the Beverly Folk Festival, our local festival. And I bought one of her CDs, it was called Hourglass, and she was selling them herself from a box. And I bought that, and I've still got it. And over the years I've bought some other ones of hers. I haven't got them all, but I usually end up sitting down and learning a couple of songs. And it was only in 2003 that I realised that a lot of the songs on these CDs weren't traditional, they were written by her in a traditional style, and I thought that was something really amazing. So I was inspired to write myself a song for Kate Busby, and I called it Irish Waltz, and it's a nice one to finish off with. So yeah, here's Irish Waltz. Thank you so much everyone, I've really enjoyed myself.
Safe for the earth.
Simon, I'd like you to give another big thank you to Edwina, but before you do, I just want her to do another song. And I'm sure you'd love to hear her. I've just actually posted on Twitter that you're just coming to the end of a superb show and that the audience has been totally spellbound by your voice, your songs, and your warmth. You have really won our hearts over, and I think we'll all agree. So let's hear it for Edwina before she does her encore.
One that was written by John Prine and a note by Lovely Nancy, and it's one of my three covers on my Coffee album, and then a lovely twist on that tour of Australia. One of the gigs I did was in a winery, which was really nice, and I didn't really know what a winery was. I've never been to a winery, and I thought it might be some kind of posh building, I don't know, with some kind of, like, you know, function room. You know, I knew I was staying over, and I remember I had this hire car. I did the whole month of the tour of Australia. It was all Victoria, New South Wales and South Australia, which is Adelaide. It was all that bottom bit. So I thought, well, I may as well do it like I do it at home and drive and hire a car for a month. There was no big dash to Perth or anything like that. So it was actually quite fun. And I drove off to this winery and I had my high heels on somewhere and now actually on the seat. And I thought, well, I'll straighten the hair when I get there, because I have really thick, curly hair straightening. And I thought, right, so I kind of got all half ready. And I did this sort of like 10-hour drive and I got there thinking, well, I'll freshen up when I get there. And I knocked on the front door and there was no answer, and it was actually sort of just a big ramshackle house down this really long dirt track. And I was thinking, well, this doesn't look too posh, it looks kind of quite nice and relaxed. And I went around the back and there were just a load of people around the back listening to music, and there was just about five or six poles with a tarpaulin chucked over the top, and all these people sat around with blankets on, wrapped around them, watching music, all drinking wine. And I knew straight away it wasn't going to be a high heels and hair straighteners gig. And I said hello, and I came with my guitar, and somebody just threw a blanket around me, handed me a glass of wine and sat me down, and it was fantastic. It was so lovely. And that's a winery, amazing. And I went back at the end of the tour and did another little gig there for them. And the same guy that booked me is also the guy that does everybody's visas if you do a tour there. And so he was taking out of his the fee for the gig, he was taking out his visa money, and there was a bit left over. And because I'd had this lovely wine on that first visit, I said to him, instead of paying me, I don't suppose you want to, have you got any of that wine? Yeah. And he went, I have indeed. And he gave me 9 bottles of this fantastic Vat 2 Shiraz. That's all it was called, Vat 2 Shiraz. And I thought that was a good swap. But the reason I'm telling you about the winery is because on that first visit there, I was with my blanket on and my wine. And I was thinking, well, I won't drink too much till I've sung, because that'll be a disaster. And he put this guest book down on my knee. And this guest book started in 1978, I think, when he started putting gigs on. And what this guy Andrew did in a bit of a cheeky way, he spotted people coming over from the folk scene, and he decided to try and contact their agents and managers and see if he could waylay them and say, do you want to come and have a, you're coming all this way, why don't you come and have an evening at my winery? And hardly any of them refused. So in this book I was leafing through, and there's Bert Jansch and all these people. My personal favourite was Peter Starstedt, the way he wrote to my lovely fella, all these dates. And then there in 1991 it said John Prine, and John Prine had played there. I thought, well, that's incredible. You know, all these people that had driven down that dirt track, had a blanket put around them, and they played a few songs. It was ace. So this is Speed of the Sound of Loneliness, and I've had such a lovely time. And Ali was just saying about putting things on Twitter. I haven't got a Twitter, but I have got a Facebook page. And I do quite like my Facebook page. I've just never really had a go at Twitter. My sister says I'm really behind the times. But there you go. So it'll be lovely to keep in touch. And thank you so much. Thanks, Ali. Really hope you'll all see me.